Tonight, we unveil my most diabolical creation.
CITR 101.9 FM.
10 times more addictive than marijuana. Ooh. To human misery.
Nice to see you.
McPhee! Ah, McBain. So glad you could make it. Have a salmon puff.
All right.
We're Leading Hearts, and you're listening to Tech and Stones on CITR 101.9
FM.
All right, yes, indeedy. You are listening to Dunkin' Donuts here on CITR 101.9 FM. A special episode of Dunkin' Donuts. It's Black History Month, and this show kicks off a four-hour block of special Black History Month programming here on CITR. We've been doing it on kind of rotating through the days, and so this week it's Thursday. So I'm going to start off with an interview with Hassan Lee. He's a local musician, and his band, Bleeding Hearts, are going to be releasing their debut album tomorrow night at the Waldorf. Consider give a listen to this interview. Give a listen to the tunes in between the talks, and maybe consider moseying down to the Waldorf tomorrow night after 8. They're going to be playing with Sean Mrazek, Lives, and Korean Gut. But without further ado, here is my interview recorded a week and a half ago in a tiny rehearsal space with Hassan Lee and Bleeding Hearts on the eve of the release of their album. After that, we're going to listen to an extended set of a bunch of girl group bands that I really love and that I wanted to showcase for Black History Month. Here we go. Here are the Bleeding Hearts.
Me. I'm Chad Warford, and I'm playing the French horn.
I'm Rose Melberg, and I play the bass, and I sing.
I'm Michelle, and I play the trumpet and baritone horn.
My name's Hassan, and I play the axe, and I sing.
My name's Jay. I play another axe.
I'm Kevin, and I play the drum kit.
I'm Layla, and I play the alto sax and the musical saw.
I'm Aaron. I play the tenor sax.
And who are you guys?
Bleeding Hearts!
That's what happens when you have eight people in your
room. The first one was fine. The first one was
fine. That is what happens when you have eight people in your
down. And the seasons
right, so I'm here with the Bleeding Hearts in your kind of small practice space. You just moved to this practice space?
Yeah, we were in a giant room before, and we got replaced by a jazz band, we were told. And it turns out they're not actually a jazz band.
Didn't sound very jazzy.
Kind of new metal thing.
Yeah. There were a handful of bands playing in here when I got here. Is it pretty chaotic to play with that many bands around here?
Well, not when we were in the big room, because there was a big divide. And then we kind of got pushed into a storage room. Mm. We're like that quiet guy in Office Space that just keeps getting pushed into the basement. So, yeah, that's us.
And how many of there are you that fit into the... It's about like 12 by 14 or so. How many people are in here?
Well, there's 8 people in the band.
Right.
There's probably room for 4 people in this space. So we usually stack or, you know, come up with something.
And so how did you come to have so many members? How did Bleeding Hearts start out?
Well, it started quite a few years ago with Layla and I. We just started playing together because we're boyfriend and girlfriend, and we didn't really know anyone at the time because we're kind of losers. So we just started playing together, and we wrote a bunch of songs. And how did it start? I guess we went traveling and we came back to Vancouver, and we kind of started playing with our friends, and we put out a call on Craigslist for horn players, and Michelle, who is in our band, saw the ad, but she didn't reply because she thought we might be weirdos or something. But then she went and saw us at a show, and she realized that we're okay and started playing with us. Yeah.
So why didn't you answer the ad right away?
Actually, I don't know what... I found out that they were playing anyway at a show I just happened to be going to the next day anyway. It was a Grave Level show. And so I wanted to be cooler and just meet them at a show instead of through Craigslist.
And had you played in bands before?
I played in a marching band for a while. That's it.
And was that good training for being in Bleeding Hearts?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Do you wish you still wore a uniform when you played?
I still have that uniform and, yeah, put it on once in a while when I'm alone.
You keep talking about playing in a uniform.
So once you picked up Michelle, who came next? How did you fill out the band after that?
Well, Michelle brought with her an entire horn section. Literally, like, she brought Aaron, and she brought Richard, who isn't playing with us right now. And she eventually brought Chad along. Mm-hmm. So that was 2 saxophones, alto sax, tenor sax, and French horn.
And you guys, the horn section doubles in another band, is that right?
Yeah, Michelle and I both play in Roll Mock, so we divide our time and our loyalty between the two bands.
So you guys almost all play in other bands, right? Most of you. How do you prioritize all that stuff? It seems like all of your time would be practicing and going to shows, which is a great way to spend your life, but how do you balance that out?
Sometimes it's tricky to organize a practice with one band or the other because everyone's got competing bands and competing schedules. But I think we've been pretty good in this band of having a regular set thing. Like we've had a regular, you know, weekly practice at a set time, and we've just been good about fitting everything else around it.
Don't you see?
So you have your horn section now. How did everyone else fit in?
Let's see. Well, basically how this band works is that somebody will see us at a show and be like, hey, you don't have this instrument in your band, so can I play with you? And then they join the band. Actually, Kevin, who's our drummer, saw us at a show at Toast, which Jay at the time, he kind of filled in for drums. I think how many times did you play drums for us before? Like once or twice?
Before
I think?
Kevin?
Yeah, before Kevin.
Maybe twice. Probably twice. Mm-hmm. Once or twice.
So no drums.
You were at that show.
I was at that show.
There were drummers
You know what I think happened? I think we were at the show and you were there. And I said, hey, Jay, do you want to play drums tonight? And you said, sure. And anyways, Kevin was at that show. And he said that he really liked us. And
but the drummer...
Yeah, he's like that drummer. Oh, I know.
So that was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I was that show was funny because it was at the Toast Collective where they have kind of a hangout, social and music. My one of my jazz quartets was playing, and after we played, we proceeded to get super 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 wasted, and then Bleeding Hearts played after, and I was like, who the hell is this band? And then was totally blown away, and I was like, wow, that's the most amazing band. And I wastedly talked to them after the show and said, hey, can I drum for you guys? And they were like, yeah, totally. And then the next day, I never ended up calling them because I was like, oh, man, I was so drunk. Probably they weren't very good, and I just thought they were. And so I ended up booking a show for them with another one of my bands just so I could make sure. And they had another drummer who they had got, and I was like, damn it, bastard took my, you know, took my Javier.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But eventually I weaseled my way into the band, and good. Hopefully we'll stay here.
We're like Spinal Tap in a way. Like, we had so many drummers, and one actually spontaneously combusted, so... That's let's see. And Jay has always kind of been playing with us and helping us. He helped record our album. Or record our album. He didn't help, he did record our album. And he also played bass on our album. And I guess around that time when we were recording, Rose expressed an interest in playing with us because, again, she came to one of our shows. She was one of the like only people that came to our early shows.
I saw you before Kevin was in the band. I would come. I saw you at Blim, and yeah. I saw you at the Shed. And
saw us at Blim when there were two other people in the audience.
But that wasn't an accident, though. I came just to see you guys because I'd seen you at the Shed, and then I always tried to see you whenever you would play. So, and every time I saw you, you had a different lineup. And so it occurred to me, perhaps I could get in this band. So I think we talked about it for almost a year before I actually joined the band.
And you've got a lot of other musical commitments. What was it about Bleeding Hearts that really made you want to get in there?
It was just, it was almost like the cool kids. It was like, this is like my favorite band in town. I want to be a part of it. I want to, get in on it. I couldn't not be a part of it. It's kind of selfish, but... I just thought they were really awesome. And I'd never played bass before, so I just kind of said I could play bass.
And they believed you.
They believed me.
When did you get back to Vancouver and say, hey, I think we should put up a Craigslist ad?
Oh, Jesus. When was that? I have a bad memory.
It's like in 2009.
2009, I guess?
Okay.
Yeah, Layla and I have lived in Morocco for a bit. And I think when I was there, first of all, I didn't have a job. She had a job, so she would go to work while I would stay home and do nothing. It's kind of horrible, but
and awesome.
I basically just had my little computer set up, and I had a guitar, and I just smoked drugs. Am I allowed to say that on the radio?
Yeah.
And recorded a bunch of songs, and I think a lot of the songs that are on the album I kind of wrote in Morocco. So we came back, and I think I kind of had an epiphany. I was just, I don't know what it was. Maybe it's because there's an instrument in Morocco called the raita, which is kind of like a snake charmer sort of flute thing that sounds like, and I would always hear that baked out of my head. I'd always hear it, and then I had an epiphany. I was like, Horns. We need horns. Layla would come home from work, and I'd be all wigged out, and I'd be like, horns! We need horns! So we came back, and yeah, we got horns. What was the question?
So you got back to town in 2009, so it's been sort of 2.5 years of building up to where you are now?
Yeah, basically. I mean, the songs, most of the songs were like half written. And yeah, I just took like a band that, you know, was kind of committed. I mean, really committed. Like all these guys are super into it and it's really awesome. And if it wasn't for these guys, the songs would still be half finished. So
half baked.
Yeah, basically.
So you have an album coming out in early March. How long has... So you wrote the songs a long time ago. When did Jay and you guys start recording those?
That was a long time ago.
Was that 2 years ago?
I think it was a year and a half.
It's a year and a half ago, yeah.
Yeah.
November of...
September. It was
2010.
Early September.
Was it?
I think so.
It was winter-ish 2010.
Yeah. Winter-ish. And what was the... I guess the recording was not, you know, you weren't booked into a studio for 3 days and pounded them out. It was kind of a slow process?
It wasn't really a slow process. Like we did the drums and guitar in one day. We did the horns in one day. And we kind of did all the kind of extra stuff in one day and the singing in another day. So we really kind of knocked it out, but it was relaxing at the same time because we were just, you know, we did the drums and guitar at Kevin's house and it was just super relaxed. We were drinking coffee and beer at the same time and like hanging out.
It shows in the finished product. the combination of coffee and beer. It's just, some bits rush a lot, some bits drag. Some bits you can hear us yelling.
But yeah, it was super relaxed, and Jay is just like great for, you know, making you relax and just playing. Like I've recorded in a studio before, and it just feels weird having there's always a bunch of strangers in the room, and they're just like looking at you from behind a glass, and like it feels weird, but this felt normal and good. Yeah.
So now the album's about to come out. What did you guys are putting it out yourselves, and is it coming out on vinyl and other things?
Or? Yeah, we decided to put it out on vinyl with download cards, because I personally haven't bought a CD in years. I know anyone that has. So we decided to just skip that whole part of it.
And then you're going to be playing a release show at the Waldorf on a Friday night.
Yeah.
Like a big professional rock show. Not that your other shows are... I was talking to Jay about this, and he was saying that it was maybe your first headlining show with like a professional sound, and I don't know.
Yeah, I think it is our first headlining show at a you know, pretty big place. So I don't know, that was just my number one choice of a place to play, and it just so happened that there was a slot open and we got in, and it'll be a good night, I think, but it'll also be a weird night because there's two other things going on. It's like a rock and roll DJ thing, which will be cool, and then there's something called Babylon, which I'm not really sure. It seemed like it just has everything.
Burlesque and DJs and yeah. Visuals and yeah.
So yeah, it's like circus performers and stuff. So, but it'll be a fun night, interesting.
And who else is playing with you?
We're playing with Korean Gut, who are awesome, and Sean Mrazek, who I love more than anyone on this planet, even though he doesn't really know me that well. So, yeah, so it'll be a good show, February 17th, 2012.
How much are we selling our records for that night, Hassan?
$5. All records must go. Just for one night only, though. Someday. Dream.
How many records did you press?
We only did 300 because we didn't want boxes of records sitting in our house making us depressed. So
we thought we could
get rid of 300. So
always leave them hungry for more. That's it.
Exactly. Yeah,
yeah. I'm sure you've answered this question a lot. Bleeding Hearts, that name.
Oh God.
I'll ask you.
It was just like one of the cheesy names we came up with, and it was one of the ones that Hassan couldn't deny. It was just like, what about this one? And he's like, all right. I think he was just sick of hearing shitty names.
That's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
I was just sick of coming up with the name, so they said Bleeding Hearts, and I was like, oh, it's a pun, sort of.
I think also because we were in Morocco and there was all these goats, and especially goats getting bloodily murdered with like blood running through the streets, and it really inspired us, and the raita kind of sounds like a goat, so I think that's what it was.
It actually came from a Wu-Tang name generator.
Really? Wow. And then I read in that slip piece of paper that you gave me that you're planning on touring.
We're going to try to work out some sort of West Coast tour in the summertime and visit Rose's family in Sacramento and hang out in SF and, drink lots of beer. That's our plan.
It's not so much
about playing shows as it is getting drunk in every town we can.
What's the furthest afield you've been? So far? Did you play? What other towns have you played in?
Chilliwack.
Chilliwack.
Nanaimo.
All right.
And Texas
Island. Oh yeah, we made an appearance at Low Decibel Fest 2011 on Texada Island. We played an acoustic set.
Ryan's cabin, was that?
Yeah, Ryan's mom's cabin. It was awesome. We got really drunk.
Anything else that anyone would like to add?
No.
Did everyone got a chance to speak? There were a lot of you. I tried to get around to the room.
Thank you.
Did we include everyone? Where's Chad? Is Chad even here?
Chad split.
Oh, see, there's so many people in this band that we don't even notice when people leave.
Kind of a small space.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
February 24th, prepare for a visual and oral treat at the Interurban Gallery. It's the Wintermids album release party and the David Thomas Mantle Art Show. With guests, aunts and uncles, Kingsgate Chorus and party DJs, it's the perfect way to spice up your Friday night. Advance tickets available from Red Cat, Scratch and Zulu Records. The Wintermids album release party, February 24th at the Interurban Gallery, is proudly sponsored by CITR. Marie-Joseph Angélique was the name given by her last owners to a Portuguese-born black slave in New France. She was tried and convicted of setting fire to her owner's home, burning much of what is now referred to as Old Montreal.
It has recently been argued that she was, in fact, innocent of the crime and convicted more on the basis of her perception as a rebellious runaway slave than on the basis of factual evidence. A competing theory is that she was guilty of the crime as an act of justified rebellion against slavery. Many authors see her as an immortal avatar of liberation and prefer, naturally, to see her as an active rebel. Others find her just as inspiring as an exceptional, outspoken, independent-minded woman who fought for her freedom and her life against formidable odds, and in spite of a society that expected submission from women, especially if they were also black and slaves.
This PSA was brought to you in support of Black History Month on CITR 101.9 FM.
It's true. It is Black History Month, February. This show is a special edition of Dunkin's Donuts, celebrating Black History Month. We have an afternoon of special programming scheduled. Up after me is Tim with We All Fall Down. He's going to be playing a two-hour special. The first part is going to be punk, bringing you up to speed on the first all-black punk bands, and then get into the present with punk bands with black members, and touching on the Afro-punk movement. And then in the second hour, looking at Jamaican music in the 60s and 70s with ska, rocksteady, reggae, and dub. That's from 1 till 3. And then at 4 o'clock, there'll be a special edition of Mantra, from Africa to Jamaica, Brazil to the U.S., Voices United in Harmony. Great stuff. Thanks so much to Hassan and the rest of the Bleeding Hearts for giving me some time to do an interview. And like they said, tomorrow night at the Waldorf, 9 is, it's a sharp 9 o'clock start time. I guess doors are at 8. And a sharp curfew at 11, because they have to do, I don't know, it's the Waldorf, they do a million things at once, and they need to clear out the stage so they can have fire dancers or something. So yeah, get down to the Waldorf tomorrow night. $5 gets you a copy of their new album on vinyl. Very good. So for the last 20 minutes of this special edition of Dunkin's Donuts, I'm going to be showcasing girl groups, African-American girl groups from the 50s and 60s. Some of my favorite kinds of music. And it's also just so foundational to a lot of the pop music you hear today. So with, you know, even garage rock, a lot of the girl group bands that are becoming big now, like Vivian Girls and Best Coast, and a lot of those bands, all you can trace back their roots to the girl groups of the 50s and 60s. So we're going to start off with one of the first, the Chantels. They succeeded the Babettes as the, or they were preceded by the Babettes. But they, in 1957, they recorded the song He's Gone. That was their first single, and they charted. They had been a band for 7 years already. They were all in school together in the Bronx. Arlene Smith, Sonia Goring, Renee Minas, Jackie Landry Jackson, and Lois Harris. Let's see. They were influenced by classical music and Latin hymns, unlike a lot of the other black groups of their time. All right. So let's give that a listen. Let's give a listen to He's Gone here on Dunkin' Donuts on CITR 101.9 FM. Thank you.
February 18th, you won't want to miss Grimes with special guests Born Gold. Grimes is back in town from Montreal, on tour to support her upcoming new release, Visions. Advance tickets are available at the Northern Tickets box office, located at the Vogue Theatre on Granville Street, and are also available at Red Cat, Zulu, and High Life Records. Again, that's an early show with Doors at 7 and the show at 8 at Fortune Sound Club with Grimes and Born Gold. Grimes and Born Gold at the Fortune Sound Club is proudly sponsored by CITR. Thursday, February 16th, there's nowhere you'd rather be than the Biltmore Cabaret, an ultra-local show featuring Chains of Love, Lost Lovers Brigade, Villa Kula, and Slim Fathers. Featuring Winnie Cooper DJs, Tristan Orchard, and Wobangs. Doors are at 8, and tickets are only $8. Again, that's Chains of Love, Villa Kula, Lost Lovers Brigade, and Slim Fathers, all at the Biltmore Cabaret, Thursday, February 16th. Chains of Love at the Biltmore is proudly sponsored by CITR.
Here's hoping. That was the Shirelles with the song "Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow." That was the first girl group of any kind to hit the number one spot on the Billboard Hot 100, which happened in 1960. That was their first number one hit. The Shirelles, founded in 1957 for a talent show at their high school. They grew up in Passaic, New Jersey. And that was released with Tierra Records. They've been described as having a naive schoolgirl sound that contrasted with the sexual themes of many of their songs. Also, they are credited in many ways with launching the girl group genre. Especially, you know, they were the first ones to have a number one hit. Also, their acceptance by both white and black audiences predating Motown acts, Motown hadn't really been set up at this point, has been noted as reflecting the early success of the African-American civil rights movement. So a big part of the acceptance was from people just loving this music so much. The Shirelles. Next up, we're going to hear one of my favorite bands, the Dixie Cups. They came from New Orleans. They were formed in 1964. Originally, they were called Little Miss and the Muffets, which is adorable, but they were named the Dixie Cups just before the release of that. They're best known for Chapel of Love, Ico Ico, which was a traditional New Orleans standard. But I'm going to play one of their lesser-known songs. I'm going to play I'm Going to Get You Yet, which was the B-side to the song Gee, the Moon is Shining Bright from 1965. The Dixie Cups are still performing. They have an amazing website. It's actually, I really love it. It's, you know, very homebrew. There's lots of twinkling stars and stuff. But they still, they have a concert calendar up. They're playing a lot of private shows and weddings and things like that. But some public shows as well. So hopefully the Dixie Cups will make their way up north soon enough. In 2005, all three of the members were quite affected by Hurricane Katrina. They were living in New Orleans. And so Barbara and Rosa Hawkins, the two sisters that kind of formed the band along with one other woman, have now moved to Florida, which is too bad. Yeah, so Dixie Cups, here is the song I'm Gonna Get You Yet from 1965.
I said love is the season, but I can't find a reason why you let me down. Get you yet, I'm gonna get you yet. All you say is maybe that you might be my baby, but you never do. Let me make love to you. I'm gonna keep on trying what you bet, 'cause I'm gonna get you yet.
Treat you like wave your palms and slap your thighs and watch the fun materialize as you sing this little song. My mother told me if I was good that she would find me a rubber dolly. My auntie told her I kissed a soldier. Now she won't find me a rubber dolly. The 369, the goose drank wine, the monkey chewed it back on the street.
All right, that was Shirley Ellis with her song, The Clapping Song, which hit number 8 on the charts in 1965. The song was written by Lincoln Chase, her frequent partner, her manager, record producer, and songwriting partner. They weren't romantically attached, though, so I'm told by numerous internet sources. She also recorded The Name Game, so, you know, Banana Banana, Fofana, Fifi, Fofana, great song, and The Nitty Gritty. Yeah, so that was Shirley Ellis. That goes out to my friend Julia, who celebrated her 30th birthday on Tuesday. Happy birthday, Julia. She is putting on a dance night or dance event weekly at the Russian Hall in Strathcona called No Lights, No Lycra. It's a lot of fun. It's from 7 to 8:30, and there's no lights on, and you're not meant to wear trashy clothes or Lycra or anything like that. You're just supposed to dress comfortably and dance in the dark. It was super fun. I went on Tuesday. It was great fun. And hopefully Julia's going to give us a call next week. We'll do a little phoner to talk about No Lights, No Lycra. Hope to see you there. Next up, The Exciters. Another one of my favorites from this era. Brenda Reed, later on her husband Herb Rooney, Carolyn Johnson, and Lillian Walker. You may know them from the song Tell Him. Tell Him That, from 1962. Also, He's Got the Power, but we're going to hear the Northern Soul classic, Blowing Up My Mind. Amongst other things, they inspired Dusty Springfield to break out of her band and do a solo, embark on a solo pop career. And they're a very powerful band. Let's give this a listen. Here is Blowing Up My Mind by The Exciters on Dunkin's Donuts, a very special episode of Dunkin's Donuts, a Black History Month special. Tim just called in. He's going to be a little bit late, starting with We All Fall Down, so we're just going to go an extra 5 minutes here with Dunkin's Donuts. Here you go.
Bye.
right. That was, that's not going to keep going, is it? No, it'll stop. That was the Iquettes with their song, I'm Blue, the Gong Gong song. The Iquettes were formed by Ike Turner to replace the Artettes, who had been the original backing group for the Icantina Turner Review. They began recording in 1960, and that song that we just heard was recorded in 1961. There were lots of members of the Iquettes. I could count a couple of dozen on their Wikipedia page. It sort of was a rotating crew of singers. According to this source, Ike didn't pay very much, which caused frequent lineup changes, and royalties were never received. There were some pretty great alumni of the Iquettes. Clydie King and Vanetta Fields went on to play with Ray Charles as the Raylettes, to play with Peter Frampton in the band Humble Pie, and most famously sang backup on the Rolling Stones' Gimme Shelter, which is such an amazing song. Very cool, Iquettes. I hope you're not blue anymore. Up next, we have a couple more songs in. Tim has just shown up, so he's going to come on in a second. But we're going to close things out with the Velvelettes. They signed to Motown in 1960. They were friends from Western Michigan University who recruited some girls from the ninth grade to join them. And in 1964, they recorded this song, Needle in a Haystack. So the Velvelettes, thanks so much for listening to Dunkin' Donuts here on CITR 101.9 FM. If you like what you heard, check out the podcast at CITR.ca or the playlist at dunkinsdonuts.wordpress.com. Thanks, guys. Happy Black History Month, and I'll see you next week. Bye.
Well, I want to believe.